it's that time of the week again. It's time for Chit Chat Across the Pond. Today is Wednesday, February 24th, 2016. I'm your host, Allison Sheridan. This week, we have Barry Falk with us, who is the nicest man in the world, or some people have called him that. He is a Mac podcast stalker. He's a limo driver in his spare time, and he's director of mobile services at a very large, highly regulated company. And I thought I'd get him on today to have a little chat about what MDM is. How you doing today, Bart? I can't believe I just said that. I say it so often. How are you doing today, Barry?
I can be Bart. I don't have the fine beard, though.
Wow, I've got that thing down a little too well, don't I?
That was awesome. Nice.
Sorry about that. Well, it's, 30 degrees in Chicago and 80 degrees here?
The chit-chat across the pond. The pond is frozen over here, so it's snowing quite nicely at the moment.
Wow.
In fact, they canceled about half the flights coming in and out of O'Hare today.
Wow. Yeah. Well, if we could just average this out, I'll give you 10 degrees for 2 inches of rain.
Yeah, you have all the heat. I have all the water. So.
That's good. All right. Well, there's been a lot of talk about MDM in the news lately associated with the FBI and Apple case, but we want to go way beyond and really dig into what it is. But it seemed like a fun, relevant topic to talk about. What is MDM? What does it even stand for?
Yeah, so quite literally, it's mobile device management. And it's the pretty common term within the industry, as you say, MDM. Some people use EMM, which is enterprise mobile management, but MDM is the most common. And typically we use it because we're rolling out thousands of devices across the US, or in our case, the globe. And we have to manage these devices. I mean, these devices are in people's pockets, purses, briefcases, backpacks. And not only do they need to be managed, but they can be lost. And we want to protect the security. I mean, that's the core of what MDM is, just protecting the people's device, protecting our data, and ensuring that everybody is safe.
So from my perspective, from the company I came from, which was also maybe not as highly regulated as yours, but definitely a security conscious or more, was we all thought it was just so they could control what we could do and not let us have any fun with our phones.
Well, absolutely. The first thing I get every time I give a device to a salesperson is, oh, you're tracking me, right? I'm like, no. And yes, I mean, technically I do have that ability, but it's not meant to be, is the salesperson at their job? That's managed by their metrics and how many sales are making. I couldn't care less where they are. But if they lose a device, that's where this MDM really comes in handy. And we had right away, when we rolled these out, we rolled out iPads, several thousand iPads about 4 years ago. And right away, we had someone call us about a week later and they had lost their device. And so I go into the console, it's kind of like a dashboard view. And I was able to see, well, it looks like, you know, I see it's in this state and I drill down, it's in this city. And I'm like, well, it actually gives me this, it's like Google Maps, so I can see the intersection. I'm like, well, I see it. It's at this, basically at this intersection. They're like, well, that's my house.
I'm like, did you steal it, Barry?
Yeah, not my house, their house.
Oh.
That would be cool. Yeah. And they're like, oh, well, that's really weird. I'm like, and one of the nice things too is that devices, not only are they locatable in that respect, they have like a heartbeat. They check in our case, every 30 seconds just to say, 30 minutes, excuse me, to say, I'm still alive, I still have power, still checking in.
So a lot more than Find Friends or whatever Find My iPad would do?
Exactly. So it's not only going to tell me location, which was Find My Friends does, but it'll tell me if the device is on. And there's a whole bunch of information that we'll get into about what reports I can also pull about all these devices, which is really handy. So in this case,
you can also control what people do with the devices, right? You can control what kind of apps they're allowed to load on the devices.
Absolutely. So real quick, because this person actually had lost their iPad. It slid down between their seat and the center console in their car.
Oh, wow.
So sure enough, they're like, no, I'm like, seriously, I lost it. I don't know where it is. I'm like, it just checked in. So they did. They found it and they were thrilled. And so I used them as a use case to all these other salespeople. I'm like, see, this person lost their device. We didn't have to report it stolen or anything else, and we were able to recover it. So that was a great story, and we've used it since day one in training, so people are aware that what we can do. But to what you're asking, absolutely. That's the nice thing about these things is that many companies just say, here's your device, and it's completely unconfigured, and users have to figure out how to do stuff. We can do that all for you ahead of time. So we set up the device. We receive it. In the case, we use both AT&T and Verizon. We get the device, we turn it on, and we go through the normal steps. But the first thing we do after just the normal setup with Apple is we install the mobile device management software. In the case of what we do is we use Mobile Iron. There's a lot of vendors. There's AirWatch. BlackBerry's got some. Microsoft. Citrix. And it does a few things. And this is all part of the setup process. So I'm going to get really geeky here for just a minute.
Nice. Yeah. The geekier, the better.
Exactly. So, and there's different ways of doing this. And Apple's actually making it a lot easier, where it was very manual in the past. Apple's actually allowing almost like a one-touch, you know, where you go to an address and it brings everything down. But we're still somewhat manual. So what it does is it basically, you type in the server name, the user's ID and password, which is within the world of corporations, is usually Active Directory. And then it automatically pulls down things that are unique to the user. So Allison, in your case, it would be like, okay, I'm going to pull down a certificate that says this device belongs to Allison, and this is an iPhone. And then your profile will say you're allowed to do certain things. You can connect to corporate Wi-Fi, but you have to have the cert to do this. You are allowed to contact our email servers, which in our case is Exchange. And then you're allowed to have access to all these type of apps. Now, when I say apps, we have, of course, the Apple App Store, but we also have an internal App Store. We create all sorts of specialized apps for our sales force, for our medical team, so people can start to kind of figure out the company I work for. But things like that are unique to the groups that they work for. And that's the nice thing, is I can personalize it down to your group or your division.
And so I'm a salesperson. I'm going to get a specialized app that's created by your company. And now, as I recall, that means that I'm going to get a special profile installed, which is one of the things Bart has talked about a few times, is I'm going to get this profile installed that's kind of like allows you to sideload something with the digital signature from your
Correct.
Company. So it's Absolutely. Not an Apple digital signature, but from yours.
Exactly. So I can push out those type of apps. Now, the user can't just install any apps on their own. They either have to download it. Either I push them out. We have an internal app store, which is a lot like the Apple App Store. And they can still do public apps as well. Within some limitations, and I can talk about that in a sec. But that's what makes it nice, is that you know, certain medical people will have this type of app. The salespeople will have a different type of app. Home office users, if you're in HR, you're going to have all the HR type apps.
Oh, right.
And so that's what's nice, because, again, I can pre-configure this through MDM, so I don't have to manually download each app for each device. It's automatically pushed on. It's great. Plus, I have the ability to force an update, so there's a new version out, or even remove an app because maybe it's no longer supported.
Right.
All that is managed through my console. And it's just a matter of clicking a group, clicking an individual, or the entire company. It's really easy.
Wow. Well, now, so there's a staff of people who have written all of these tools and configured everything, right? Or is Barry a one-man shop here?
It feels like I'm a one-man shop. So there's really about two of us that manage the direct mobile device management. And then we work with application groups that create the actual apps. So they'll come to me, the business will come, say, we want to create this app, say, travel expense app. And we want to push this out to everybody. We give them the parameters. So we need an icon, so it looks nice. What are you going to call it? And then we need the source file. And then we wrap it all up, put the certificate on there. So again, so if somehow they were able to extract this file, it's not going to work outside our company.
Right.
It has to be on a device that's managed by Mobile Iron with our certificates. So it's really
smart. Think about what you said. You're basically doing the sysadmin for thousands of replacements for laptops.
Correct.
Right? As two people.
Yeah, basically. I mean,
that's a phenomenal ratio of support.
I think it was like, what, 100 to 1 or something like that?
Yeah, if you were pretty efficient.
Yeah.
My group wasn't.
Yeah, and that's it. It, you know, programs like Mobile Iron or AirWatch make it so easy to deploy thousands and thousands of devices, and they're savvy in terms of what they report back to me. So if someone's in violation, if they've downloaded an app that we don't want them to download from the public app store, or you know, we even have a rule that tells us if they've tried to jailbreak, I cut them off of our network immediately. They are absolutely segmented off. They can't send any viruses across. Not that really you can with iOS devices, but we completely eliminate that risk by doing this. So, yeah, I'm not always the people's favorite person in the world.
Yeah, I am thinking from the opposite perspective. The company I worked for, they decided to, instead of trying to whitelist apps, so you could whitelist apps, which means you're going to only allow approved apps on a device. Mm-hmm. But that means you're going to get people whining all the time about making you approve this app. And you've got to have a staff of people testing the apps, make sure you want them on your devices. You can also blacklist apps, but then that means, you know, you spend a lot of time and energy doing that. So what they did was, what we came up with is an idea of gray listing apps. So we basically said categories are okay. Mm-hmm. Like, hey, you want to put Angry Birds on? You know what? You go, girl. Put your Angry Birds on there. We don't care. You can have games on there. But the one they messed up on was they said you couldn't put anything on that was had the under 17 rating. Mm, well, guess what is under 17? Everything. Yeah, yeah. Anything that looks at the web is under 17. So I know.
One password until recently was that way?
Yeah. If it's got a browser in it, by definition, it's under 17. So you couldn't get on Reddit. I mean, you couldn't do anything. It was like, well, that's one where you might have missed a little bit.
Well, and that's the problem we had. Was we took the same approach initially, because when we rolled this out, mobility was getting big, but it hadn't exploded like it has in the last few years. Excuse me. So we took that whitelist approach, and you know, we had about 100 that we said that was fine from the Apple App Store. And again, Mobile Iron would warn us when, say, you know, Allison downloaded Angry Birds, right? It's a game. It's not a business need. Mm-hmm. So why would you do that? And we tried to go down that path. Well, now there's 1.5 million apps. The administration couldn't possibly be done by 2, let alone 200. So we've taken a similar approach.
Yeah, what's the value add anyway? If somebody wants to play Angry Birds while they're waiting for a flight?
Right. Okay. Yeah, and again, if you go back to MDM and these reports, I can look at the amount of memory that's available on devices. So if people get below like 10% of available space, I might send them a note, or the system can auto-generate a report saying, you're getting low on space. Please check for these things, music, books, movies, and please remove them off your device, because that could impact their day-to-day job if they're trying to get legitimate data.
So you're not going in and saying, hey, I know you're watching Ferris Bueller's Day Off or something like that. You're just saying, look, you're going to run into problems. Make some space.
Exactly. And our written policy is such that it tries to use common sense wherever possible, but as we know, common sense is pretty rare in the sales industry. So we really try to give them...
You didn't have to say sales or industry.
Yeah, in any corporation these days. So we try to give them guidelines to really make it easy for them to use their device. And we really do believe in things like a work-life balance. So to your point, I don't care about games. I don't care about if you're on a flight and you're going to be in the air for 3-4 hours, it's great to have a movie. And so we encourage it. The iPad is a great device for doing media consumption, of course.
So let me get one thing inserted here. You and I talked about this offline. At least in the state of California, I don't know if this is true across the United States, but if your company gives you a device, mm-hmm. they own the device and they own the data on it.
That is absolutely correct, yes.
Okay, is that nationwide that's true?
I don't know what it is, but because we have salespeople across the U.S., we take the most strict policies and apply it across the board.
Yeah. So I've run into a lot of people who are like, well, they can't do that because they can't look at my photos. Well, yeah, you better have your own phone if you want your own photos. You're perfectly allowed to go do that.
Right. And we tell people, like, you have to carry a work device to do work. In fact, you cannot get email on a personal device because we have it locked down. It requires that certificate. Mm-hmm. So people are like, oh, well, I don't want to carry two devices. I'm like, well, you can bring in your phone number. If you have a personal number you want to keep, that's fine. And we even let you take it out with you, which is somewhat rare. But we do get there is a bit of a balance back and forth. But we also tell people, you can be under legal hold. If we get sued for some reason, then your device could be on legal hold. And if we find out that you happen to have company data on a personal device because you forwarded an email that you're not supposed to do, that device is now also under legal hold, and we'll take that personal device as well. What we do is, this is, again, it's a yearly attestation where we have people review policy and basically sign off that they know the policy.
Right.
So, again, the fun and joy of working at a large company.
Sure, sure. I definitely understand that. So I think I've got an idea of what MDM is and why it's good for a large corporation, certainly a way to manage the data. Talk some about the security of the data, by the way you guys do it.
Yeah. And so the core of it is, you have things like, you know, we're visiting doctors, we're visiting with other people. We have health data, right? We have other people's private information, and we absolutely have to ensure the security of that no matter what. We take that extremely seriously.
So that's HIPAA compliant?
Exactly.
Okay.
So what we do is encrypt the device. So we force a password. Even before iOS did this, we were back in the iOS 4 days is when we first started testing. And we always required a complex password, which forced encryption. We always make sure the device is timed out after 15 minutes. And so we've always been extremely cautious and maybe too conservative for the users, but we've always been that way because we want to ensure we protect it. Well, what happens is, Allison, you go about your day and you lose your device, right? It happens.
Mm-hmm.
So you can call me and I can go in and I can do the location. I'm like, well, this is where I see it. But after a certain amount of time, the battery will die. Right. And so by having that level of security on, and I use, by the way, I use the 10 times wipes your device setting
with a
passcode, because if it gets in somebody's hand and they keep trying the password, I need to ensure that nobody can get in.
So that isn't on by default.
It is not on by default, but we, in that profile that we send to that device, it is automatically set and the user cannot change it.
Okay. Right.
The one thing I'll make a note, the one thing that Apple does not allow us to control is the updating of iOS.
Oh.
That is absolutely not controllable through MobileIron. Apple refuses to allow that out of their hands.
You know what? God bless them for it, because you know how big corporations are. You guys would be on iOS 6 if they didn't do that to you. Am I right?
It's true. And it does cause us some issues because of those internal apps. There are occasionally things that do break.
Right. But they break and you have to fix them when the technology is still new. What drives me crazy is that the trade-off is so often made to say, well, we don't want to fix that right now. And all of a sudden you're on Windows XP, you know, and it's 2016.
But that's absolutely true.
And that Apple happens all the time.
Right. And Apple's become very good now about having betas available. As soon as WWDC finishes, they release the beta, and I tell all our testers, we have emails that go out to all these companies. And these are things you learn, again, when you work with a lot of vendors, is that you put it into the contract that they have to keep their software up to date.
Yeah.
And they have a certain amount of time.
Yeah. I just want to continue my rant because I wasn't done, because this just really irritates me. The problem with letting it go too long is that the people who know how to code that thing aren't there anymore. They don't know anything about it anymore.
Right.
And that's
a real problem.
It just drives me crazy. Rip that Band-Aid off. Just get it off and keep moving. So right now, you guys aren't having any problems associated with iOS 9 from iOS 8, right? Because you had to go. You had to do it.
Yeah, I mean, we usually wait about 2 to 4 weeks after something drops from Apple just to do that last round of testing, just in case something changes in the Gold Master. But we found it to be very, very clean.
So you can delay it by 2 weeks?
Well, we tell people not to.
Oh, okay. But they can still push it.
Okay. As soon as that little notification comes up on their window,
they've got to get rid of that number, right?
Exactly. So, and that's fine. I mean, we really don't run into issues. And we have reports that we generate on a weekly basis that shows, okay, we have these number of people on iOS, and we're on 9.2.1, on 9.1, 9, and then we still have, of course, a few stragglers. But now we know who they are because MDM tells us this.
So is that handy if they call in with a problem with an app that you can say, well, why don't you update your OS, you goof?
Exactly. We had that case just last week. My software isn't synchronizing properly. You know, a database within one of the apps checked out. Well, you're still on version 8.something. We upgrade them. It worked like a charm. So at least they learned a lesson, I hope, that they'll upgrade when we tell them to.
So one user at a time, right?
Yeah. And it does take a lot of effort, but people know, again, that we're trying to keep them. First off, we try to give them the latest and greatest cool stuff. So they have iPhone 6s. They get iPad Air 2s. Oh, yeah.
Wait, you upgrade every year, every device?
We upgrade every 2 year, but we're pretty aggressive in trying to get them upgraded.
That's still pretty good.
Eligible, yeah.
Wow.
You know, so, I mean, it works in our advantage, too, because devices will show wear and tear. Mm-hmm. And so we've been very aggressive on that. What's interesting for me, and I know this is a little bit off topic, is now with the iPad Airs out,
Plus Pro S.
You know, you can definitely see a segment of our user population very interested in it because they want to do stuff with the Pencil. They want to see what they can do from the keyboard. Could it be a true laptop replacement? I mean, mm-hmm. I've sold my MacBook. I don't use that anymore because I've got the iPad
Really?
Pro. I love it. Oh, yeah.
Wow.
So I'm following in the footsteps of some of the other podcasters I'm stalking, but it's very compelling. It's light. I was just in Boston for a couple of days. It was my primary computing device easily.
Wow. See, yeah. I've gone the other direction. Is I've just got to have all the devices on at all times. I was telling Steve last night I was upstairs on my MacBook Pro, and mm-hmm. I wanted to go downstairs for the evening. So I picked up my iPad, got my iPad Pro. I got my Pencil out of my purse. I got my phone and my MacBook. to walk downstairs. That's all I was doing. And my iPad Air lives in my gym bag. So that's my, so all the devices all the time. My watch, got my watch with me too.
Oh, okay. That doesn't go away.
I just keep adding devices. It never occurred to me to get rid of one.
Yeah. Yeah. I'm simplifying. I don't know why. I mean, I was really taken. It wasn't a planned transition, but I found it was just so convenient. And I guess the way my brain works, just kind of that one app at a time. And most of the stuff that I do, you would do obviously a lot more because of the podcast of recording. But you know, for what I'm doing, 90% of it can be done through the iPad. In fact, Mobile Iron makes a great iPad client.
Oh, that's what I was going to ask you. So you can run MDM,
yes,
for Mobile Iron from your iPad.
Yeah, they have a standard web browser, but then they have dedicated apps that are just for the management of the device, as well as certain other features that they've kind of like, you know, they have their versions of add-ons for managing documents. Like they can add their own encryption to individual files. You can do all sorts of cool, you know, what they call tunneling to have secure communications between devices and our home base. So yeah, they really are, in my opinion, one of the leaders out there because they're always pushing it and they're very good about communications. So for me, they've been a great partner in this whole endeavor of mobility.
Yeah, interesting. So you talked earlier before we got on the air about steps for the users to follow, what you do for the users.
Right. So in my vision is ultimately is that I could ship a device from the carrier directly to the user. They basically put in one URL and it auto-configure. We're not quite there yet. So today I get the device, I'll log in for the user, I'll do that configuration. And what will happen is these profiles and certificates will come down. It only takes maybe about 5 minutes. It's really pretty quick. But what's nice is then the profile then forces the iPhone or the iPad to have a secure password. So if I don't set it initially, it'll pop up and say, I have 60 minutes to set a secure password. And it's based upon our security policy. So it's got complex characters and uppercase, lowercase, all the fun
and a goat
stuff.
And all that.
Yeah.
So that's different from their different from their Exchange password? I thought you said they were one and the same.
No, this one is separate.
So this is
for the device itself.
So this is the passcode to get in.
Yeah, just to the device.
Okay.
And then we have to configure mail, which we don't have Kerberos or any other type of process to kind of auto-synchronize that yet. So we do have to manually type in that as well. Because I want to give this to a white glove treatment. So when the user gets the device, they've had that all configured, the apps have been all downloaded, they basically can start to use it. Now, we do walk a user through how to re-enroll their device if for some reason something happens, gets wiped out, or you know, even if you change groups, I need to send a whole new configuration down.
Oh, right.
And so they could send it back, and we could do all the wiping and stuff like this, but we also have ways of having the user do it. But it really makes it as simple as possible because you have the password policy on there, the timeout is all on there, and all the required maintenance. And like I said, that heartbeat goes automatically.
You've got to be doing something in parallel here, though. You're not hand touching 1,000 devices, are you?
I do actually have an outsource group that does a lot of that for me.
Oh, okay. Okay.
Yeah, I have to handle some of the executives in the home office because, well, quite club service.
Yeah. I personally hate that. I disagree with that as a philosophy, but I never ever won. I think the executives should live with whatever the worst support is, and so they always up in the game. But
exactly. That's another one of my challenges because I'm also responsible for our service desk and end user teams.
So have you got or have they got these stations where you plug a whole bunch of devices in and they're yanking them in and out? They're all in slots and all that?
We do have some of those, yep. And it's like this big cart, big metal cart that can move around. And so they can do dozens of devices at one time.
But Apple changes the size and configuration of those devices so much. I remember the early ones. It's like, okay, here's how you fit all of the iPhone 4s. You put 10 of them in, and it's like, and then 5 minutes later, it's an iPhone 5. Oh,
exactly.
Crud. Now what do we do?
And even the iPad, you know, they change the thickness. So you can't have
just a little bit sometimes.
Yeah. So it's basically a lot of cables hanging off of a wire rack.
Okay.
But it works. But one of the things that I did want to mention is talk briefly about the San Bernardino County case, and we talk about devices being unlocked. Mm-hmm. So our devices, like I mentioned before, you have 10 chances to enter in your passcode. You miss it the first time, fine. You try again. And I forget, after the fourth or fifth time, it times out for a minute or 2 minutes, then 5 minutes, then 15 minutes, then an hour, and then I think it's 2 hours before it wipes it. And it does this for a couple of reasons. One is, well, what happens if it gets into a position where your cat lands on it and starts, you know, just accidentally typing in stuff, or your kid starts trying, right? So it forces it not to accidentally wipe. The second benefit, of course, is a brute force attack. So it slows it down from someone who's nefariously trying to get into the device as well. And so that's how we manage that. So I always tell people, if you've done it four or five times, please call me or call the service desk.
Oh, because you can turn that off? Or
I can temporarily unlock a device.
Oh, wow.
So this is why it's frustrating that you hear that this device could have been managed by MDM, but wasn't.
Okay, so we're talking about the county. The county owned the phone in that case. And from what we understand, they actually own Mobile Iron.
They had Mobile Iron as their service that they were using.
But they had not configured the phone in a way that they could have unlocked it for the FBI if they'd configured it the way you have.
Correct. Because all it has to be is either on cellular service or known Wi-Fi. I send a command from Mobile Iron. It reaches the device. The device will then unlock. So when you do the swipe to unlock, instead of coming up with a passcode, it immediately lets you in.
Wow.
And then it warns you that you have to change it to a new password in 60 minutes.
Right.
But that's how you let people in. And again, people forget passwords all the time. We know this is just
human.
One of the challenges, right? And this is where Touch ID is awesome. Our number of calls to the service desk went way down once Touch ID came on board. But yeah, so they obviously had that capabilities, but they didn't implement it on this device for some reason.
So that just brought up a thought to me. When the fingerprint ID first came out, a lot of people said, well, yeah, you can fake a fingerprint. And then they said, oh, well, no, there actually has to be blood running through it. And it's you heat and all that kind of, I don't know if heat was part of it, but you would think it might be. And then people said, well, yeah, if you cut my thumb off, that's not going to work. And so taking the thumb of Farouk wouldn't work today. But they did prove that you could make a mold of it, couldn't you?
Yeah, I mean, if you really want to go through that
effort. Oh, but the 5C doesn't have a fingerprint sensor.
The 5C doesn't, right.
And so that's what this was, right. Exactly. Right.
But if someone with a 6S or a 6S Plus, sure, you could, in theory, somehow take.
Yeah. Yeah, so they could take a mold.
So. Yeah, it's theoretically possible. But again, it's that risk and convenience. You have to find the right balance.
Yeah, well, and it doesn't sound like San Bernardino did.
No.
I mean, in retrospect, my organization was never perfect, so I'm not going to point fingers, but it's unfortunate that they could have done that.
Exactly. And this could have been, at this point, would have been an issue. Unfortunately, I think this was going to happen at some point.
Right. It just happened to be this case.
Right. But I really worry about, you know, from my perspective of protecting the data of the company I work for, the people that I work for, and the data of the people that we work with, I absolutely do not want anybody under any circumstances going in there unless they have a good reason. Now, because we have MDM, I could allow access, but I would have to have a written court order and HR sign off and all the appropriate things. But we would have the proper due process by intentionally weakening it by having a backdoor or specialized software. It just makes me nervous because then if someone does lose a device, then I can't guarantee that device is safe, that data is safe from somebody else.
Right. And that's people's health data you're talking about. So that's
exactly
pretty
it's
darn important.
Extremely important. And it's just I just don't think it's worth that type of risk. And the other thing that we talked a little bit before the show is, and I'm curious to see where this would fall, is iPhones used to be the hottest item for people to steal because you could grab it and you could resell it. So Apple created Activation Lock, which is a way basically forcing people to use their Apple ID on a device. And if you didn't have it, sorry, it's bricked. Now, again, because these are corporate managed devices, I have the ability of using MDM to bypass that. So that's unique for us. But if you put in a back door, someone else can then figure out how to break that activation lock. And then again, I think the crime rate would start to go up again. So you have politicians on one side saying they wanted this, they got it. Now you have some people saying, well, no, they should have access to it.
Yeah, I remember New York's police department saying that they were really happy because it was some massive percentage of the crime was related to iPhones.
Correct.
Because they were valuable items, but they became instantly invaluable. Wait, that's the wrong word. It's interesting. It's a negative, but it isn't. They became not valuable the minute they put activation lock on it.
Right.
So, but you're saying with MDM, you can still unlock it.
There is still a way to do it. You have to kind of work through a special. There's an Apple configurator that we use that basically it's a one, I don't know the configuration behind it, but basically it's the one ability to unlock a device. So Apple's always had that ability. And even if you didn't have the configurator, if you can show that you purchased a device with a, you know, a credit card receipt or something, you can prove it that that's really yours, Apple would still remove the activation lock.
Okay, because that's something different. That is purely an anti-theft.
Right. But again, if you put backdoors and devices, how does that, you know, take away some of those?
That's right, but you're not calling that a backdoor, that they will let you into a device you can prove you purchased?
Right. I'm just worried about anything that's being interfered by a government or other corporation.
Right, right. There's something else I was going to ask you along those lines, and it's escaping my brain right now. So is there anything else in the San Bernardino case that comes out to you that you've been thinking about along these lines?
Yeah, it's just, I mean, it's, I guess I look at it from a precedent standpoint, and of course we're hearing people lining up behind the FBI at this point. So I'm really hoping that we do the right thing. We make this a good debate. This either becomes a law one way or the other. But my personal opinion is I really just don't want to see this happen. And I think we all know, you know, people listening to this podcast, is whether the device is secure or not, you can still have apps installed, you know, WhatsApp or other apps that have their own levels of encryption. So it doesn't really, you know, you're taking away one level, but people, if they really want to be secure, there are other ways of still using these devices.
Yeah, I was reading that some apps, like Telegram is my personal favorite, encrypts mm-hmm. in an area that is not backed up. So whether right. if the killer, shooter, terrorist had been using WhatsApp or I don't know about WhatsApp, but I know Telegram was one of them. If he'd been using Telegram, and whether they could have gotten to the iCloud backup or not, or mm-hmm. a local backup, it wouldn't matter. That would have still been encrypted.
Yeah, exactly. And again, this is just
It wouldn't have been in those backups.
It wouldn't have been there, right, to look at. And again, this is just my opinion, but based upon most of the user population that I deal with, is that because of our policies, and I right off the bat saying, keep your work information on this device, keep your personal data on this device, they really do try to file that where they can. So I don't think there's going to be anything on this phone, even if they could get into it. I really don't think so. It would have been on his personal device, which they said they already have.
Well, that he already destroyed.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, but he and his wife destroyed their devices.
Right.
I know another question I was going to ask you. This whole time we've been saying the word device, but by device we mean for you, it's always iOS. Is that correct?
Correct. We're 100% iOS shop. Yay. But these work really well with most Android devices. Obviously, BlackBerry has their own level of security and management. Windows has their own. Mobile Iron as a company supports Android, iOS, and Windows Mobile 10.
Okay.
And actually, I should say, and Macs, because we do have a few Macs that we use only for the purpose of iOS development. And we use Mobile Iron to manage those. And it works the same exact way. I can track them, wipe them, manage them. It works really, really well.
Oh, interesting. Can you use them to manage Windows machines?
Once Windows 10 comes out, I believe Mobile Iron will be able to manage.
I think Windows 10 is already out.
Well, you're right. It is out. I think it can, but I'm not sure if there's a difference between the desk side and mobile versions. I don't know enough about Windows 10 yet. Yeah. Ask me again in about a year when we've refreshed all the laptops.
Right. Hey, go get yourself one of those little kangaroos I've been talking about.
Oh, yeah. That would be pretty cool.
Yeah, because you can hook it up to your iPad Pro as a monitor and play with Windows.
Yeah. Well, and you know what it's like to work for a large company. So globally, we have like, I don't know, 30,000 Lenovo X230s running Windows 7 Service Pack 1 across the entire company. We are the most homogenous company I've ever met.
Wow. Wow. Yeah. I can't believe you're all iOS too. So did you guys talk about doing any Android stuff, or were you able to personally railroad the company into doing one thing?
We started with iPads because we had some unique apps that we wanted to roll out for our sales team that was only on iOS at that time. Mm-hmm. So that kind of gave us the leverage to go down the iPad route. And we looked at, again, Mobile Iron scaling up at some point so we could bring in iPhones down the road. Well, the iPads were such a wild hit that day two, people are saying, can I get an iPhone? Can I get an iPhone? Hmm. And I'm like, hang on, let me finish this rollout. And then
give me a minute.
Yep. And about 3 months later, we started testing it, knowing full well, I mean, I had a personal one, but knowing full well that it shouldn't be any problem. And it worked flawlessly. In fact, it's so easy because we're on one OS to manage all that. So we went from having, I'm trying to remember the exact number, I want to say about 1,200 BlackBerries. In 2013, by September of 2014, we shut off our BlackBerry server.
How fast?
Within a year.
Within a year?
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah.
Wow, so you guys really are crisp about it. So yeah, nobody was begging for BlackBerries then?
Oh, we had a couple people that were diehard. You're not going to take it out of my hands. Yes. We actually brought one person. Who was it? Ryan Seacrest came up with that.
That keyboard to go with it? Yeah.
Yeah, and they loved it. They said this was the greatest thing ever. So they were a huge fan of iPhones after that. Now, of course, they've upgraded. They don't have anything new, and they've begrudgingly gone, but they like iPhone enough to say, I can deal with typing on glass.
Yeah, yeah. You know? It's amazing what you can get over when you get the advantages, right?
Yeah, exactly. And it is a great operating system, and we do really try to make the user experience. We're big believers of trying to make this whole experience as easy as possible, mm-hmm. and we get feedback. We do a lot of user testing. So I think it's a good... We try to be a good collaborative environment and be good partners with our users.
I'd really love to interview some of your users to see if they hate you.
See, yeah. The number one thing is they'll complain about their passcode, because the interesting thing, and I believe this is an Apple setting, is that if you don't use Touch ID for 48 hours, you have to type in your passcode.
Yeah, or if you shut it down or if the battery goes dead. I seem to have to do it every couple of weeks. It seems to come up.
Yeah. And so I get that a lot from our sales force, because Friday afternoon they'll shut off, they're done. And they won't touch their iPad until Monday, and they have to type it in again.
So you should have worked over the weekend. What were you doing? Watching your kids' soccer game?
I never have that problem.
You know, with the strong passwords, I'm going to tell a tale out of school here about Bart. That was pretty funny. I had this weird problem that I got locked out of my own server by my hosting company. I couldn't FTP into my hosting company as root. And I got the hosting company on the phone with Bart. We were all on Skype together, got us all talking. And the guy, it was a really weird situation where there's a tool where you can see what's being locked out. And I could go in through the web interface and I could see that tool. And it said I was coming from an IP address of, I think it was 32 zeros. Not a normal IP address, but like 00:00:00, you know, eight sets or whatever it was, 32 characters. So anyway, so we're going around trying to figure out what's going on. And I said, well, Bart, well, how about you try to log in as me into my server? So mm-hmm. I've got Bart on a Skype video call, so he's watching my screen, but the service provider can't see my screen.
Right.
So I opened up one password and I opened up my password, which I had created using Bart's password generating tool. Right? xkpasswd.net. And it's like 68 characters long. And, you know, there's a goat in it. And I mean, it was, I just sat there laughing because here's Bart going, L, capital Q, 7, throw salt over my shoulder. You know, he was actually pretty fast at it, but he was laughing because it was like I was making him, you know, eat his own dog food that he made.
Yes, exactly. But you really have to do it. And again, that's why we take it so seriously. And it's, yes, sure, it's a pain. But when people lose their devices, they feel very glad that at that point, I've now put in all these precautions into place for them.
Right, because they're not going to jail. Oh, exactly. You know, we kind of glanced on, but I'm not sure we got in depth with it. One last question about MobileIron. MobileIron encrypts the data beyond what Apple encrypts the data?
So I have the ability to encrypt a file with... that's unique to MobileIron by using one of their certs. And we also encrypt the traffic. So anything like email is a good example. I have a mobile device and I'm checking company email. Well, I'm on the cellular network, which is usually pretty secure, but I could be on a public Wi-Fi. So what I do is that MobileIron then encrypts all traffic. So it's like kind of like its own personal VPN that goes through. And that way it ensures the integrity of the data going through. So we're not going to have that ability to have the man in the middle attack. I mean, I'm sure there's still ways of doing it, but it adds a whole level of protection that we wouldn't have without the MobileIron in there.
I see. So I understand that in the data transmission, but what do you mean by you can encrypt a specific file?
So
I call you up and I say, Barry, can you encrypt, you know, bob.txt and you encrypt it for me? That isn't what you mean.
Right. So if I have various programs that tie into MobileIron, so they have their special written APIs. And a lot of programs have done this. And I want to say Microsoft Word actually might support it now. But there are other apps that do as well. So if I have a Word document and I email it to you, it's going to be encrypted in, you know, both is at rest on the device and then in transit to you. And you have to have a valid MobileIron certificate to unencrypt it. So if you try to send that file as an attachment to your home email address and you don't have the certificate on your Windows machine, on your, sorry, you don't have a Windows machine. Well, you do have one.
My Mac at home.
Yeah, your Mac at home. You cannot open it unless that device is managed by Mobile Iron.
Even though you know the password.
Even though you know the password,
oh,
because
interesting.
It's basically like a, you know, like a DLP type package where it's encrypting it at the file level.
Wow. Okay, that is pretty cool. Yeah, I'm glad I asked for a clarification on that because I definitely did not understand that.
So again, people know me well enough that if they try to send stuff to their home addresses and it doesn't work, they shouldn't ask me why.
Oh man, I made Barry mad at me again.
Yeah, exactly. I'm going to take you off the network. Reset their passwards. They try to stay on my good side because when the new devices come out, I will get a dozen emails. Like if they come out, was it March 15th, I think is the rumored.
Yeah, there's a line already at the door.
Oh, they're going to be, oh, I heard Apple's coming out with a new iPad. Can I get one? I'm like, first off, Tim Cook hasn't come out on stage yet. And when he does, I will order one to test it. And if it makes sense for our next, basically we do refreshes of everybody at the same time, then yes, they can get one. The phones we do rotate because people have contracts at different times. But yeah, as soon as the iPhone 7 or whatever is announced, I'll be getting calls.
Wow.
But you know what? The great thing is I have to test this stuff before I deploy it.
Oh, darn.
So yeah, it's rough.
You know, so what do you think of the Pencil in a business environment with the iPad Pro?
You know, it's, I see it within our environment within a couple of groups. So we have some scientists who I think could find real benefit in terms of the way they do electronic notebooks and they take notes and they annotate things. We have a training team that we've already gotten them some devices. So they want to do stuff where they're showing something on the screen and whether it's Keynote or other apps that they can highlight with the Pencil. And they use Apple TVs to broadcast all the stuff. So they're actually, that training room is very Apple-y. And that's proven to be very effective in those scenarios. But for our sales force, first off, they're going to lose the Pencil.
Right.
And that's $10 at a shot. And I can't manage that. And it's a big device. So the iPad Pro, I don't think would be right for our sales force. What I'm curious about, if the iPad Air 3 comes out and it supports the Pencil, then I'll have to make some decisions there. And I suspect we'll probably provide that as an accessory for them.
So you're saying, it's not the $100 for the Pencil. You just said it was because it was $100 for the Pencil that you weren't sure you'd do it, but it's still $100 for, it's not going to be $80 for a Pencil with an iPad Air, right?
Yeah.
It's so shorter, so it's $10 cheaper.
I do have to figure out how we're going to manage that because it's easily lost because we do deploy just the basic stylus, those little foam tip rubber.
Blech.
So some people like them. Most people don't. They just
once you've used the Pencil, there's just no going back to that. Now, I would have said that the Pencil is an unnecessary luxury until I got MyScript Stylus.
Mm.
Did you check that out yet?
No.
This is you will change your mind by the time you try this. It's a free keyboard do you remember MyScript Calculator came out a while back? Everybody's all excited. You could draw with your finger and it would turn it into numbers and calculate for you.
Right.
It's the same people. It's an alternate keyboard, and I'm not a fan of alternate keyboards. I never was before, but it allows you to write by hand and it does optical character recognition on the fly.
Wow.
It is amazing. The only place it doesn't work real well is actually writing onto the web, onto like a web form. So okay. If I'm in Google Plus, I have to open the Google Plus app to write. It just starts making characters up if you use the web interface. I don't know. And in URLs, it doesn't do. It's really gets confused. It's not great with symbols. So like it's hard to do a colon, backslash, that kind of thing.
Sure.
But for normal text writing, it is appallingly, amazingly cool. And I think about sitting on a plane writing a report, if somebody likes to write by hand, I've actually found a lot of circumstances, like in the morning, I doodle around. I lay in bed, have a cup of coffee, you know, pet the cats. I lay on my side and I can sit there and answer emails. I can answer text messages. I can write just, you know, short blurbs, but so much more comfortable than writing on typing on glass or even on the Apple keyboard.
I'll definitely have to try that out. One of the other apps that I've used that's got writing and typing as well is Microsoft OneNote.
Yeah.
And this is where we're really starting to leverage Microsoft apps on iOS devices, where we're kind of a little bit of anything and everything. Microsoft, I'll give them credit. They have done a fantastic job of updating their apps on a consistent basis for iOS, taking advantage of the Pencil, taking advantage of the iPad Pro. And I really think this is going to be the direction that we go. And using things like OneNote that can, it also has the ability to transcribe written notes into text. And it does a pretty good job, although it doesn't sound like it's as good as yours.
This is, yeah, I've played around with that a little bit. This, I'm going to send you a video. Yeah, I've got the link here. I'll let you take a look at this when we're done with the Skype call. But this thing is, I mean, it is amazing. I am just, I'm a huge fan. So it is very, very cool.
Ah, thank you. But yeah, I think, you know, just to kind of summarize where I've been when I've seen mobility grow in the last 4 years, people love these devices. Sorry to say it, they don't love Windows. They don't love the laptops. They really like iPhones and iPads, and they really want to use them for everything. They carry them around everywhere. They're in meetings, and people are taking notes. I'm sure they're also goofing off a bit. But they take it home, and they're productive. And I use it on the plane all the time. It's just – it's so easy. It's light. It's just a great device, and it's kind of neat to see
people
really
enjoy it. You're a fanboy.
I am a fanboy. The interesting thing is – where Microsoft's going to take the Surface and Surface-like devices down the road, because we're such a Windows-heavy shop in general, there are people pushing me to say, hey, you should look at that for your next front round of refreshes, which is in 2019. So like, we'll see what happens.
Like the,
so we have to talk
like
again
the Surface
in 3 years.
Book or the Surface itself?
More like a true Surface, or I think Lenovo, who we tend to use, they have a Yoga tablet that's a hybrid as well. So we'll do some testing this year and next, and it's potentially possible that in 3 years, when we're due to refresh everybody once again, that we could go to one device for everybody, and that would be a Windows device.
Well, you never know what Apple's going to do between now and then.
Well, that's true. I mean, they've really stepped up their game with the iPad Pro, and I don't know how intentional some of this was by them, but if I find myself using that device 90% of the time, I think they've really done a good job of making it a truly efficient, productive machine.
All right. Well, hey, Barry, this has been really, really fun. If people want to talk to you, let's see, you're FulkB, F-U-L-K-B on Twitter. Is that right?
Correct. Yep. That's probably the best way to get a hold of me. And then if you throw an event somewhere in the city and you tell me about it, there's a good chance I'll just show up.
Yeah, there you go. There you go. Exactly. There is. I was waxing my car once and Barry walked up. So you never know with Barry Folk. And I think if people aren't doing anything on, is it June 16th? Yeah, if they June stop 16th. By Chicago, they could say hi to you, right?
Yeah, absolutely. So we've got the second iteration of MacStock, Mike Potter's big event. And it's 2 days this year. And last year it was great. We had the event and then we had the barbecue in my backyard, but it was about an hour plus apart. So we combined the events. They're both going to be at the same location this year, which I think is going to be great. And so I'm really looking forward to it. You can go to MacStock2016.com for more information.
All right. Very cool, Barry. I really appreciate you coming on and we'll talk to you again soon.
All right. Thanks so much.
I hope you've enjoyed this episode of Chit Chat Across the Pond. This is an unsponsored show, so if you like what you hear, you can help support the show by using the Amazon or App Store affiliate links you'll find over at podfeet.com. I love feedback, so if you have questions, comments, or suggestions, you can email me at allison@podfeet.com. If you want to join in the conversation with other listeners, you can go over to our Google Plus community at podfeet.com/Google Plus or our Facebook group over at podfeet.com/Facebook. Thanks for listening and stay subscribed.